He was seen as a success story, the very best of what can happen when a man reforms his life in prison. Articles were written about the way he had turned things around and was making a difference. So how did he end up smashing someone's head with a rock? This is the story of Stephen Hawthorne, the killer who was freed by the U.S. Supreme Court, only to kill again. Hi friends, I'm Katie, and this is Katie Does Crime. Thank you for joining me for the first time if you're new here, and hello to the usual rapscallions and reprobates. Please consider subscribing or joining me on Patreon if you'd like to hear more true crime stories. Today's case caught my eye when Project Alice asked me to cover something from Chicago. It's a redemption story and a cautionary tale all in one. The redemption came the day Stephen Hawthorne left Stateville Correctional Center for the first time in over 33 years. The 49-year-old was a free man. He'd grown up in public housing on the south side of Chicago. All he'd ever known was being poor and watching crime happen around him. On July 9, 1983, 16-year-old Stephen asked a girl to share some of her corn chips near their Stateway Gardens housing project. Her 17-year-old boyfriend told Stephen to leave them alone, and Stephen didn't like that. So 2 days later, he shot at the boyfriend 6 times at a nearby basketball court. He hit the boyfriend 3 times, killing him. But Stephen also missed and hit another man, a 39-year-old who was innocently playing chess with a friend 30 feet away. The bullet ricocheted off the ground and ended the man's life. At a trial that lasted 4 days, Stephen was tried as an adult and testified in his own defense. He said that the boyfriend had come at him with a knife and he was only protecting himself. He said this boyfriend was a known neighborhood bully, someone who had been preying on him for years, and the boyfriend had shot at Stephen only the night before. But Stephen was found guilty and sentenced to life in prison as a 17-year-old. At his 1984 sentencing, the judge said that Stephen would no doubt be rehabilitated by the time he was 40 or 50 years old, but unfortunately, the only option available to him was a life sentence. The judge said, "I think the objectives of justice would be better served with the court given discretion to sentence a person in your situation to less than natural life. However, I cannot make the law. I can only interpret it and apply it to the circumstances that are presented to me." Fast forward to 2014, and Stephen was now almost 47 years old, studying history, leading prayer in prison, and learning to fix HVAC systems. He said he spent most of his time reading from one of his 300 books, working on his GED and then his bachelor's degree. He had plans of becoming a lawyer and said he wasn't the impulsive person he'd been as a child. The problems with mandatory, one-size-fits-all sentences had come to light as the juvenile crime wave that experts predicted in the 90s never materialized. Maybe we had thrown reason out the window in favor of being tougher on crime. Of course, victims' rights proponents argue that some crimes are so violent that offenders don't deserve a second chance, even if they were children at the time. But research shows that teenagers are more susceptible to peer pressure and make bad decisions because they aren't aware of consequences like adults are. I'm sure it's hard to have compassion for a criminal when your friends or family were their victims, but the whole thought behind the juvenile court system is that kids developing brains have more potential to be rehabilitated if we treat them rather than punish them. In 2012, decades after Stephen Hawthorne was sentenced, the U.S. Supreme Court ruled that mandatory life sentences are cruel and unusual punishment and violate the Eighth Amendment of the Constitution. Under an Illinois law in 2014, Stephen and about 80 other inmates were given new sentencing hearings. Some life sentences were reaffirmed when that offender showed what they called irreparable corruption, but Stephen was given a second chance. A family member of one of his victims made a statement at the resentencing, saying that this would be a second chance his brother would never get due to Stephen's thoughtless actions. This man said that the hearing forced the family to relive the pain of the murder all over again. But the judge decided to give Stephen a new sentence of 68 years rather than life in prison. Stephen had already served half of that time and was given credit for good behavior, so he was eligible for parole. He allowed himself to hang a calendar in his cell and start crossing off the days until he'd be released. He allowed himself to have hope. 49-year-old Stephen Hawthorne was finally released from prison after more than 33 years in February 2017. He called it a Lazarus moment, the way he was coming back to life like the man in the Bible. Stephen said his concern was with his legacy going forward, what he would do with the rest of his life now that he was given a second chance. He said, "What can I contribute and give back that will outweigh the mistakes that I've made in the past?" His parents and grandparents had died while he was serving time, and no one had come to see him in prison for the past 13 years. Only his lawyers were there with a bag of caramel and cheese popcorn to see him emerge and show him how the world had changed so much while he was locked away. Stephen felt the weight of the responsibility to succeed on his shoulders, saying, "I know there's no room for failure." In 2019, at the age of 52, Stephen was in the news again for his role at a transitional house for people trying to escape lives of violence. He was now known as Mustafa Hawthorne, and the house was run by the Inner City Muslim Action Network as an emergency safe house. He was a manager, there to hold men to their curfews and enforce the rules, but he was more than that. He was a mentor to young men who had gone through some of the same hardships he had as a kid, men who had seen their loved ones taken from them and didn't want to end up with the same fate. One of them said he knew how to load a gun at the age of 6. One of them said that if he stayed in his neighborhood, he was going to have to kill or be killed. Maybe Hawthorne could help turn things around differently for them. He was known as a big brother, and it looked like his commitment to contributing to the world was being realized. So much so that the Inner City Muslim Action Network pushed him to help with community organizing and rewriting policy. Hawthorne was a success story. But in 2020, he had a setback. Hawthorne was arrested for gun possession in February of that year. Then earlier this year in January, cops made a routine traffic stop and found 5 guns in his car, including an AR-15. But in April, while 56-year-old Hawthorne was out on bond with his weapons case pending, things took a much worse, much more grisly turn. At 1:50 a.m. on April 16th, Hawthorne allegedly used a key to break into his ex-girlfriend's house in South Chicago. The GPS monitor he had to wear while on release tracked him to her home. Tamara Washington was sleeping in one bedroom with her new boyfriend, Norman Redden Sr. Her 3 children were asleep in another bedroom. Tamara was only 26 years old, but she must have liked older men because her new guy was in his 50s, like Hawthorne was when they broke up at the end of 2022. Hawthorne crept past Tamara's uncle, who was watching TV in the living room, and went to Tamara's bedroom. He shot her boyfriend in the face with a 9mm gun, alerting everyone in the house. Tamara's uncle tried to fight Hawthorne off as Tamara ran out of the house. More shots were fired, and the uncle pretended to be hit. Hawthorne used this opportunity to run after Tamara, chasing her down the street. He shot at her and managed to injure her right arm, which gave him the chance to overtake her. A neighbor's doorbell camera footage shows him beating the half-dressed Tamara with his gun while on top of her. Yet she somehow managed to escape him, giving herself a second chance. But Hawthorne caught her again and resumed beating her. Then he hauled a large rock over from a neighboring yard. He dropped it onto Tamara's head repeatedly, crushing her skull. A couple in a car happened to pass by and tried to stop Hawthorne, but he threatened them with his gun. They decided to drive on to alert the police, but at that moment they saw Tamara's daughters, only 3 and 5 years old, nearby in their pajamas. The couple put the girls in their car to keep them from danger. Because of this, the children didn't have to see the last horrible moments of their mother's life and that bloody rock. A friend of Hawthorne's said his relationship with Tamara had deteriorated thanks to an ongoing argument over some things Hawthorne had left behind at her house. It had gotten worse over time, and Hawthorne was just fed up. The friend said he partly blames the fact that Hawthorne was locked up for most of his young adulthood and didn't know how to have relationships with women. We know that men who leave the prison system are more likely than not to return. A 2018 study found that 68% of state offenders will be arrested again fewer than 3 years after their release. Hawthorne's boss at the Inner City Muslim Action Network said that he seemed traumatized by his time in prison, and this wouldn't be the first time that someone was unable to cope with life on the outside. Hawthorne is back in custody as of right now, held without bond and charged with murder and attempted murder. Tamara Washington's aunt understandably blames the system for allowing him the freedom to kill her niece. She says he will not get away with murder for the second time. I know some would say that having served 33 years the first time is hardly getting away with it, but I understand what she means. Tamara Washington's aunt called her resilient and full of life, an amazing singer who will now never have the chance to be heard. She appears to have been studying at the trade school Lincoln Tech since last year, where she seems to have been learning to work on cars. The thing that's especially sad to me is remembering back to that judge who originally was forced to sentence Hawthorne to life in prison when he was just a teenager. The judge lamented having to hand down that mandatory sentence and said Hawthorne wouldn't be a threat to anyone by the time he was 40 or 50. It'd be a little bit funny if it wasn't so sad. I hate that such a tragedy happened to a young mother, and I hate that Stephen Hawthorne failed himself. I really believe he had every intention of turning his life around, and I hate how this reflects on other prisoners. but I'd love to know your thoughts on this case, if there's anything that should have or could have been done differently. Thank you for tuning into my podcast episode. I'm just a true crime fan like you are, and I really appreciate you taking a chance on me. Please subscribe and tell a friend if you like spending this time together. You can also find me on YouTube in the flesh by searching Katie Does Crime.